Hour two of the Blitz starting right now here on Fan Run Radio. Charlie Collier, Josh Stackhouse with you for another hour. 105.7 FM, 1340 AM. That's where you find us on the radio waves. We're also live on Twitter, live on Facebook, and live in the app, in the Fan Run Radio app, which is free to go download, so you can take us with you wherever you go. Also, live in the web browser at fanrunradio.com. Phone lines are open, by the way, if you'd like to call in, give your thoughts on what the future of the SEC scheduling could be. Because, I mean, as we laid out in hour one, we are down to one of two possibilities. Either everyone will play 9 SEC games each year with 3 permanent rivals that you play every single year, and then 6 teams that rotate each year, which allows you to play every team in the SEC both home and away in a 4-year stretch. That's one option. Or the other option, everyone plays 8 games with 1 permanent rival and 7 rotating opponents that you play each year, you know, that rotate each year. And you'd still play every team in the SEC, home and away, in each 4-year stretch. Now, obviously, there are several tricky options that we've, you know, several tricky obstacles that have presented themselves with either option, what we were kind of laying out at the end of hour one. Again, you know, some of the biggest ones, obviously, how do you determine who the permanent rivals are? How do you keep things fair for some of these teams that don't want to play an extra SEC game that are, you know, are already towards, you know, the bottom of the SEC? And how do you please teams while having an unbalanced number of home and away games in the SEC each year? So, you know, those are obviously some of the biggest concerns. But here in hour two, Ross Dellinger, who, you know, all this information has come from, who's been covering this expansively over, you know, on Sports Illustrated, he has given it a shot to lay out, you know, what teams' permanent rivals could be if you move to the 3 permanent rivals and 6 rotating games in a 9-game conference schedule. So he said, we guessed on permanent opponents while considering A, the primary and secondary rivalries, B, geography, and 3, creating as much equity as possible. So with all that being said, Missouri's would be Oklahoma, Arkansas, South Carolina. Okay, Arkansas, Missouri, Texas, and Kentucky, which is, I guess, a little strange. Texas A&M would be LSU, Texas, and Mississippi State.
Okay.
So I guess I thought maybe they would get Arkansas, but
the first two, I don't know. I don't really care, I guess, who they play.
Yeah, but A&M, you know, LSU, obviously that's that year-end game that they play every year. We got, you know, that's the game that basically the rivalry that's been created that changed college overtime rules.
Yeah. So who's A&M again? LSU, and then who?
LSU in Texas.
Okay.
Which I would love if we can set up A&M in Texas.
Yeah.
The last one would be Mississippi State, which, you know, I guess you're just – for balance purposes, you just throw in a team that needs an extra. Texas, this one pretty obvious, Oklahoma, A&M, and Arkansas.
Okay.
Which that could be probably the, you know, one of the tougher sets of permanent rivals we've seen.
Because Arkansas is no slouch really anymore.
Yeah, I mean, I feel like they'll continue to be good with Sam Pittman there.
Yeah.
Oklahoma's would be Texas. And then Missouri and Florida. Which doesn't make a lot of sense, but there aren't a lot of, I guess, natural rivals for Oklahoma besides maybe like A&M, Texas, Arkansas, Missouri.
I thought they'd maybe give them us.
Also out west. So, you know, for Oklahoma, they could just be that school to fit in for some schools that also need a third rival.
When did we play Oklahoma?
We played them 2015.
Was it? It was. It was 15
and
or 16.
Also 14, I think.
Was it my first year up here?
I don't know. It was either 15 or 16, but.
That's why I thought they'd give them us instead of Florida. But I know. I don't want that, but I mean, you have to
I think
give
it's
up
like
something
a balance
sometimes.
Thing.
Yeah.
Which okay. Tennessee, because Tennessee, you know, is going to get Alabama. LSU, we get Ole Miss, A&M in Alabama.
I like that. I like
makes
that.
Makes sense. You know, you want to keep that Alabama game just because it's been the most watched. A&M is an obvious rival, and then Ole Miss makes kind of just makes sense for Ole Miss, Mississippi State, LSU, and Vandy. You know, they just balance it out with Vandy. Plus, you know, they play Vandy every year already, and then Mississippi State and LSU. You know, you get the Egg Bowl, and you get something else. You get LSU just a local, you know, a close-ish team geographically. Mississippi State. Ole Miss every year, again, makes sense. And then Kentucky and A&M.
Makes
Kentucky,
sense.
They also play every year.
Makes sense.
And A&M, you know, I just throw that in there as well. But here's where things get a little tricky. Like, Alabama's would be Auburn, Tennessee, and LSU.
I like that.
Auburn's would be Alabama, Georgia, and Vandy.
Huh.
Vandy would be Tennessee, Ole Miss, Auburn. So Tennessee's would be Vanderbilt, and this is just all, you know, prediction.
Yeah.
Vanderbilt, Alabama, South Carolina.
Yeah.
So you lose, you lose the rivalry with Georgia and with Florida.
But you still get to play them every other year.
I would like it. Yeah, I would.
I don't mind that, you know. You still get to keep the Alabama rivalry. You have to, I guess, keep Vanderbilt in there just because it's in-state. And then South Carolina, I guess, is a good enough replacement of those Georgia and Florida games. I wouldn't say good enough, but there's enough of a rivalry there, I guess, being neighbors. We could turn that into something and just – we at least get to make Gamecock jokes for the rest of our lives, I guess.
The one thing, like, for me is I want Kentucky on that schedule. I feel like you could replace South Carolina with Kentucky here.
Yeah. I think there's more rivalry on borders there than us. Because
Kentucky is getting Mississippi State, Arkansas, and Georgia. Like, maybe instead of Arkansas, you know, Kentucky gets Tennessee. And then for South Carolina, they can just get Arkansas instead of Tennessee.
I think that would be a better rivalry than Arkansas, Kentucky. I feel like there's
so that's what I would that would be like my biggest complaint from a Tennessee perspective.
I don't mind the South
but Vanderbilt,
Carolina.
Alabama, Kentucky, like South Carolina. I mean, that's you feel like that's a pretty favorable setup for Tennessee. Kentucky, meanwhile, or Auburn, you know, Mississippi State, Arkansas, Georgia, Auburn, Florida, Kentucky, Florida, Georgia, South Carolina, Oklahoma. And South Carolina, Florida, Missouri, Tennessee. So, I mean, that's just, you know, one guy's shot based on, you know, some ideas. Again, I don't hate that. In terms of when all this could be wrapped up, well, the scheduling issue, again, primary topic during league meetings in Destin, Florida. One issue with that is Texas and Oklahoma will not be there. Not expected to, at least.
Oh.
Officials aren't sure whether a decision will be made during SEC meetings or if it could still be pushed back to later this summer. Many within the conference, though, feel like a decision needs to be made and will be made by the end of the calendar year at the very latest. While Oklahoma and Texas aren't due in the SEC until 2025, there's always a chance that something could be worked out sooner, and it seems highly unlikely that Oklahoma and Texas will strike a deal to leave the Big 12 next year. However, there's no real rush either. But the SEC's new TV deals that doesn't start until 2024 could make it possible that Oklahoma and Texas would, you know, try to jump out 1 year early to, you know, get in on the new TV deal, basically make more money. and from there, you know, get a share of that TV deal as well. Big 12 will have a new commissioner and will also be working out a TV deal in 2024. So it does kind of make sense that in 2024, that's when you'll get A&M in Oklahoma.
Or Texas in Oklahoma.
But, again, all of the 14 SEC presidents and athletic directors and coaches all heading down to the Hilton Sandestin next week. And the primary discussion is going to be the scheduling, debate. You know, I don't...
What one do you like better, just off top? Would you rather have the three permanent games, or would you rather have the one with just the eight games?
You know, if I'm picking right now, I'm picking 1-8, 1-7.
1-7, that's what I'm leaning to. I just think that would be... I'm okay with playing everybody every other year. I like that idea. I don't, because you'll still have those rivalries.
I just don't want to play a ninth SEC game.
Yeah, I don't want to make our lives harder to get back into, you know, top caliber.
The Blitz, who's calling?
Well, wraps up our talk here on SEC scheduling. And, you know, I'm sure we'll probably get more updates on that as SEC meetings actually commence. But, you know, a lot of good stuff there from Ross Dellinger as we try to figure out what the future of the SEC just, you know, very well could look like. But, you know, we'll put a bookmark in this conversation and we'll pivot towards some college baseball because we got Logan Quinton on the line. And on the other side of the break, we'll be talking with him, you know, talking SEC awards, potential snubs for Tennessee that some people are angry about. And, you know, a little look ahead at the SEC tournament if this thing ever actually happens. So stay with us right here on The Blitz. Back here on The Blitz, we got Logan Quinton on the phone. Your guy, my guy, Knoxville's guy, America's guy for baseball, host of the 920 podcast on Twitter at LDQ Sports. Logan, SEC tournament starting today. How we doing? How we feeling?
Oh, I'm feeling good. I went ahead and took that Bama money line this morning before I even had breakfast.
Big confidence. Oh.
Yeah. So, you know, we've got baseball from basically from sun up to sundown and then into the midnight hours. So I'm pretty pumped for today.
Let's go. Let's go.
And they are underway in Hoover, by the way.
Oh, they did start now?
Yeah, Alabama's up 1-0 already. Yeah.
Okay, yep. Cool. Yeah, so I know the latest I saw was that they were in a rain delay, so I did not know that we had gotten started officially.
Man on first and second with one out. I mean, first and third with one out.
Well, you know, before we talk SEC tournament, Logan, obviously yesterday was, you know, an important news day in terms of all SEC teams and SEC awards. So yesterday, Coach of the Year, none other than Tony Vitello, which, you know, I think some people thought Jim Schlossengale could be there, but...
There's no way.
Tony Vitello, I mean, when you have a year that Tennessee did, makes sense. Freshman of the Year,
yep.
Drew Beam. Delight to see. Very deserving. I mean, you know, kid was incredible this year. Pitcher of the Year. Oh, it's Tennessee again! Chase Dolander, who, in my opinion, and obviously a pretty consensus opinion was, yeah, easily the best pitcher in the SEC this year. You know, maybe if Barco or Cannon wouldn't have gotten hurt, like maybe, sure, they could have had an argument for it, but they didn't. So Chase Dolander it is. And then here's where some people found themselves upset. Co-player of the year, because they named two co-players, they named two players of the year instead of just one. Sonny DeShara, old Sonny D at Auburn, and then Dylan Cruz at LSU. So real quick, before I ask you, Logan, what you think, I know that there are people that are upset that they think that Trey Lipscomb, at the very least, should have been a co-player of the year. I agree, yeah, that Trey Lipscomb had a fantastic year, was a very, very, very good player. But in my opinion, they got it right with Sonny DeShara. Where they got it wrong was including Dylan Crews. That's where I think that they messed up. I don't think that it should be co-player of the year. I think that it should just be Sonny D as your SEC player of the year. But if you were going to go co-players, I would still, you know, I think the nod should go to Lipscomb over Dylan Crews. But again, I think it should just be Sonny D. So Logan, agree, disagree, you know, where do you stand on this?
I'm with you on the latter half of that. Like, that's my biggest issue, right? Is how is Trey not the second person you get to on that, right? Like, he can't be the odd man out in a co-player of the year. Where I disagree a little bit is I think Lipscomb was the player of the year. Now, if it's an MVP award, then it goes to Sonny D. But in my opinion, it's not an MVP award. It's who had the best year and who's the complete package. And to me, that's Trey Lipscomb.
I'll agree with you on that. It's not an MVP award. It's not who's most valuable. It's who's had the best performance out of all of them.
Sonny D's, you know, what MVP award, sure, I can get with that because you take him out of that Auburn lineup. And I'm sorry, Blake Rambush is amazing, but he's just not. I mean, that's just a totally different lineup. And, you know, towards the end of the year, we saw, and now don't get me wrong, you end the season batting .382, that's special. We saw Sonny D. Once he got into conference play, his average peaked at .491. I mean, it was like he was getting on base at will, right? Whether it was intentional walks or whatever else. I mean, the guy was just an on-base machine. His average did dip about 50 percentage points over the last month. But like I said, you end up at .382 at the end of the year, it doesn't matter how you got there. I mean, that's pretty amazing. But with that said, to me, Lipscomb was just steady as a breeze all year long. He exploded right off the bat, no pun intended, but, you know, those first couple of weekends. And then, you know, Tennessee was playing teams like Iona and Rhode Island, and we're all sitting here thinking, okay, that Lipscomb looks amazing. This is a pleasant surprise. Is this going to last? And it did. Conference play came around, and he was a model of consistency, both offensively and on the defensive end. He's got a nice glove. He could pick the corner there really well. In a year where there's not really a standout, you know, there's not a Dansby Swanson on the infield, this year in the SEC, a lot of really good gloves, but Trey Lipscomb, definitely one of them. He can steal bases. He can get – I mean, his display at Mississippi State down in Starkville last weekend, what was it? Was it the second game, the blowout game where he was just – I mean, it was a dinger party, and, like, guys were – it was like batting practice, but – whatever game that was where Lipscomb was, I think he was 4-for-4 or 5-for-5. I mean, he was just putting the ball wherever he wanted to. And that's kind of been a microcosm of what it's been all like all year for him. Just can get on base in a variety of ways and so athletic. And to me, he's the total package, and he was the most consistent. And Crews had a great year, but I feel like Crews became part of that discussion based on last weekend. You take his stats from last weekend away, and I'm not so sure we're here at this point. I mean, he had like it was amazing. He went 4-for-4 one game against Vandy. I think he had 20 total bases. I don't have the stats in front of me, but his weekend was definitely an outlier for the. He had an amazing weekend at the Hawk, you know, where they destroyed the Commodores. But I would be anxious to see if that doesn't happen, if he's in this discussion, because I don't think he would be. But hats off to him and the Tigers; they made a late push. But at the end of the day, I think it's Lipscomb's award. But I will say this. I was prepared for it to be Sonny D just because of all the talk he had.
Team sweep.
Yeah, I all the talk he had all year long, Lipscomb, we really didn't hear him his name brought up by the analyst for the award until like the last 3 or 4 weeks. So I was prepared for Sonny D. Would have been fine with a split, but to bring, I agree with you on the Cruz part. Bringing him in and leaving Trey out, yeah, I can't get with that.
I mean, to me, even like, even Drew Gilbert has a better argument to me to be co-player than Dylan Cruz. Like, people don't realize Drew Gilbert finished with a .385 batting average, which is the best in the SEC of those that are qualified. You know, he scored more runs than Sonny D. He had one less hit, more doubles, more triples, had 9 less home runs, had 10 more RBIs, and slugged a similar percentage. You know, the biggest difference biggest difference between Sonny D and Drew Gilbert is the walks, and that's the biggest difference between, you know, Lipscomb and DeShara as well, was just all the walks that Sonny DeShara has faced this year. I mean, 62 times he's been walked this year. That's, you know, almost double the second closest of any of those top guys. That's why I still think, like, Sonny D, you know, he had a batting average, you know, 30 percentage points better than Trey, which, again, it dropped towards the end of the year to get to that point. You know, he finished with, you know, less, I guess, extra base hits and less home runs. But, you know, part of it was that he didn't really have the luxury of playing in such a stacked lineup where you have to pitch to him, where you have to, you know, go after him.
Mm-hmm.
Sonny DeShara just got walked constantly. So that's why, you know, his power numbers, just in terms of a total bases standpoint, a total extra base hit standpoint, RBI standpoint, are a little behind Lipscomb, but I just think it's because of how frequently he got walked. I still think Sonny D deserves it, but
I just think a co-player of the year is just weird in general.
Dylan, make a decision. The biggest problem is Dylan Cruz.
Yeah, you just should hold to your decision if you're going
to Dylan Cruz should not be there, plain and simple. But, yeah, I mean, there are good arguments for Lipscomb and for Sonny D. Now, your first team All-SEC, catcher from Florida, Sonny D at first base, RJ Yeager from Mississippi State at second. Trey Lipscomb is your third, you know, first team All-SEC third baseman. Jacob Gonzalez from Ole Miss at shortstop. In the outfield, Enrique Bradfield Jr., Dylan Cruz, and, of course, Drew Gilbert. At starting pitcher, Jordan Cannon and Chase Dolander, and then Tyler Guilfoyle from Kentucky as your relief pitcher, first team All-SEC, and Dominic Keegan as your utility guy slash designated hitter from Vanderbilt. So Tennessee, you know, landing 3 guys there on that first team All-SEC, and honestly probably could have gotten more, but you move to that second team and you see, yeah, Logan Tanner, catcher, Tim Elko at first, Ryan, Targak at second, Jacob Berry at third. From there, Josh Day from Missouri at short, Wyatt Langford in the outfield, Spencer Jones in the outfield, Dylan Rock in the outfield, but 2 more Tennessee guys, Chase Burns and Drew Beam, you know, that starting pitcher spot. And then, you know, an Auburn reliever, an A&M utility guy, and a South Carolina utility guy. And then 3 more Vols on the SEC freshman team, Chase Burns, Drew Beam, and Blake Burke. I thought even, you know, you could have seen more there. But Drew Gilbert also on the All-SEC defensive team. So in my opinion, I think there's one very obvious snub that stands out to me from Tennessee. And that would be Jarrell Ortega. You know, I thought that he had an argument to maybe even be first team All-SEC at second base. I know how good RJ Yeager's been. You know, Yeager hit .317 on the year, 18 home runs, you know, 15 doubles, 56 RBIs. But, I mean, you look at Ortega, better average, also hit 15 home runs, had 15 doubles, and 4 triples. More total bases, a better slugging percentage. So I thought Ortega had a pretty good argument to be first team All SEC, but if not first team All SEC, at least second team over Ryan Targak from Texas A&M, who, you know, this year you look at his stats and, you know, he didn't even hit .300. He hit .296. He only had 12 home runs, only two doubles, or I mean only six doubles and only two triples. So that one really didn't make sense how Ortega got left off there. But Logan, any snubs that stand out to you?
Not really. Like you mentioned that there, Christian Moore definitely could have been on the freshman team, but I think that was probably a situation where it's one or the other with him or Burke. You know, clearly if Moore would have, you know, just taken a hold of that DH role and, you know, played it the whole year, I think without a doubt, obviously he would have made it. I think kind of ate away at each other a little bit in terms of votes, so to speak. But that one, you know, I can sleep well over that, and you know, no hard feelings over that one. But you do have a point with Ortega on the not being on the second team. I think first team, you got to give it to RJ Yeager. I know Mississippi State had obviously an underwhelming year, but Yeager was amazing. I mean, you could argue that, like, without Yeager, I mean, that team, maybe five wins in the SEC or something. I mean, that's just, bad is bad, but I mean, he kept them in the discussion, I think. Ortega, I'm with you. I think Ortega probably should have gotten second team. I know some people were upset about Beck not being on the second team.
He just didn't really have a good argument for it.
Right. I mean, he's a first rounder. He is, in terms of a prospect, I mean, one of the top prospects coming in this year's draft. But that man, he was putting himself in position halfway through the season, you know, to be there, to be first team or second team all conference. But the way he finished this last month, you know, that's, you're just not going to get it with all the talent, you know, that's out there based on the year you had. You know, and that's what we talked about earlier with the discussion we had to begin the segment. Just based on the year you had, you know, how has it been? It doesn't really matter, you know, in terms of a prospect, what kind of prospect you are, because obviously he's, you know, in my mind, he's one of the best prospects in this year's draft. Yeah, I think Ortega, if you're going to point somewhere, either between Ortega or Moore, it would probably be Ortega.
That's what I'm actually like. I'm fired up that Ortega wasn't included. I consider him a sizable snub.
He ended the season so strong. Great last couple of weeks there. I mean, he was consistent anyways, through.
Yeah.
And I get what you're saying about Yeager, too, obviously. I mean, you know, without him, Mississippi State would somehow be worse. But when you compare the two side by side, I still even think Ortega statistically better than Yeager, which I guess it goes back to the same thing we talked about with like Sonny D versus Trey Lipscomb, you know, the luxury of playing in Tennessee's lineup and the extra at-bats you get and whatever else compared to not. But, you know, to not see him even on that second team, that has me fired up. That has me pissed off. It has me pissed off for him because I think he 100% deserves to be on that second team.
Did deserve it.
But transitioning, taking a, you know, just a quick look here at the SEC tournament. Obviously, the Vols, you know, don't get started till tomorrow if the rain, you know, is kind. You know, tomorrow at 5:30, taking on the winner of Ole Miss Vanderbilt. I did want to ask you this. Do you know if there's any, again, talking with Logan Quinton, LDQ Sports on Twitter, the baseball guy. Logan, do you know if there is any, like, what the contingency plan is for, you know, multiple days of bad weather if we get to that point, given the fact that, you know, rain is projected the next 3 days in Hoover? You know, would they drop the double elimination and go single elimination to try to, you know, still squeeze it in? Or is there a precedent for a rain-affected Hoover?
That's a good question. I mean, because if there is a precedent, I haven't seen one. Normally, you know, people that have covered it for years and, you know it like the back of their hand would probably go ahead and put that out on Front Street. I'll do some digging and see if I can find out. I can't think of a scenario. I mean, first thing that comes to my mind is, maybe they could finish up on Monday, I don't see a, you know, anything blocking them from extending it today.
You just wouldn't want to put your team, like those two championship teams, though, like have them go an extra day closer to region, though, would you? That way, I guess that would be my concern.
I mean, yeah, no, I mean, no, you would, you don't want to, but yeah, no, that's a good question. I'll do some digging. I'll reach out and see what I can find. I'll tweet it out later. We'll put it on the pod.
Put it on the pod. All right, now looking at the actual SEC tournament, well, again, Tennessee playing the winner of Ole Miss Vanderbilt tomorrow. And, you know, I'm sure we'll try to have you back on this week to once Tennessee actually starts playing baseball games. But Ole Miss going with DeLucia tonight. They said he wants to be the guy that has the ball in his hands to pitch Ole Miss off the bubble. He wants to be in that spot. I have not seen if it's McElwain or not for Vanderbilt. Have you?
Connor Holton.
It's going to be Connor Holton tonight? Okay. I expect Ole Miss to win that game, but... You know, who do you think, you know, who do you think Tennessee ends up matching up with tomorrow? And, you know, if Ole Miss does go and throw DeLucia and get that win, you know, do you think that there's a chance that they kind of punt tomorrow's game and throw their, you know, fourth arm to just try to set themselves up to maybe pick up another win or two in the loser's bracket and get off the bubble?
Yeah, I think I'll lean Ole Miss. I just, man, Vandy, I was selling stock in them a long time ago. I mean, one of the most overhyped statistics surrounding Vanderbilt was their team ERA. I mean, it's at right at four, right? They ended the season right at 4.399. But a lot, and they had a complete game, a complete perfect game, a combined no-hitter earlier in the year, and that's fantastic. And they had moments like that where they patched together really good pitching performances, but it was most of it came against non-conference teams. And I agree, they do have some arms. Like they have, if you took the top half of their pitching staff and they were a bullpen, you would be in pretty good shape if you had a decent starting rotation. They just don't have that dude. They don't have a guy you can give the ball to and say, go get them until the cows come home. They just don't. And so, but Ole Miss does, and Dylan DeLucia, he's going to go out there, and he got blown up in A&M last weekend for 7 runs. I don't think he completed 2 frames. I think it was 1 2/3. But I think he bounces back. I like the over in that game. I'm probably not betting it. I haven't decided yet, but I lean Ole Miss, and I lean the over for that game.
Yeah, after watching Vanderbilt this past weekend at LSU, I have a hard time thinking they can get anything done.
And then, they've got some guys. I mean, if you got Enrique Bradfield, I mean, he's going to cause problems and give you a little bit of an edge. But they're missing some alpha dogs, I think.
So Tennessee and we both agree, Ole Miss tomorrow. The follow-up to that question again, do you think that Ole Miss would kind of punt? You know, that they would just throw like a fourth arm?
Well, I'm trying to be kind here, but I don't think it matters for them. Because like after Dylan DeLucia,
I mean, we all know it's bad. But I'm wondering if their mindset could be, hey, you know what? Beating Vanderbilt, that pretty much locks us in, but if we want to feel, you know, 100% instead of 85%, we might want to win one more game and
save your
second.
We
doubt
it's
going
to
be Tennessee, so let's save our best arm for.
No, I'm with you. Like, yeah, they, I don't know who it would be. I mean, Hunter Elliott kind of came along at the end and he was serviceable. Derek Diamond, I know we made fun of him earlier this season. I called him Derek Dustin Diamond because his ERA made you want to screech. But he kind of had some okay performances there towards the end. John Gattis, he's a bulldog type. Like, he's not going to be afraid of any moment. He's probably going to get hit around a little bit more often than not, but he's going to go out there and try to eat innings. So it'll be one of those three. I don't know which. Maybe I mean, I would go with Gattis because I feel like with Hunter Elliott, the development of Hunter Elliott, like I said, to end the season, I think there's probably something there. And it's somebody that there's not as much tape on and scouting on, if you know what I mean. So, yeah, but no, I'm with you. I think that they should go with their best, their better option. If they win tonight or today, they should go with their better option after Tennessee.
All right. Well, Logan, before we let you go, any other thoughts that you have on, you know, SEC tournament today or any of the SEC awards, all SEC teams?
Yeah, as far as the tournament goes, you know, I'm really interested to see. We'll talk about it on the pod, but I think, you know, outside of Tennessee, you know, I'm looking at Florida and LSU. What can they do to kind of put that final exclamation point on a surge? Both of those teams had a resurgence towards the end of the year, and I'm real impressed with what Florida's done after they lost Barco. Remember, that was the week they played Tennessee, and they fought Tennessee tooth and nail. Tennessee, you know, took care of the Gators, and I thought that was going to be the death of them, really. And they turned around, swept Kentucky, and then have not looked back. They've kept on rolling. Like to see what LSU's done. If that pitching staff comes to form, I think they're trying to figure some stuff out there. It looks like they are. They're going to be a dark horse for Omaha. And then who out of the bottom feeder teams, like, who's going to shake things up down in Hoover? You know, that's my question. I'm looking at Kentucky and Alabama. And I'm going to lean Alabama between those two options. Let's see what they do today. I know they started, they were up 1-0 when we started this conversation.
They're up 3-0 right now.
That's, you know, those bats are getting hot. I watched two of those games down in when they played Arkansas. Those bats are getting hot. They have guys that are just flat out annoying, like Jim Jarvis and Zane Denton. To me, those are guys that can have a moment in Hoover and be such an annoyance and shake things up.
Georgia's already made a pitching change here.
Yeah, and Georgia. Yeah, by the way, Georgia, I don't know if they're worth mentioning. I mean, the Vols have killed them for good. They're obviously going to make the tournament. They remind me of Bama last year. I think the wheels have fallen off. I think they're going to have an ugly postseason.
All right. Well, well, obviously we'll have the 9:20 pod with Logan and myself come out, you know, later, I guess, probably tomorrow. And we will have hopefully Logan back on the show later on in the week as, you know, the SEC tournament continues to unfold. But, hey, you heard it here. Those are some of his thoughts. And you said Ole Miss in the over, right? That's your bet?
I'm not betting. I'm not betting those yet. That's where I lean. I'll tweet it out. I'll do some more research. But that's where I lean would be Ole Miss and the over. Like I said, I already took Bama money line. That game's underway. I'll try to come up with some more before the day's up. I'll tweet it out.
Hey, quick answer. You lean Florida or South Carolina in that game? Because that game I can't figure out. I kind of like South Carolina.
Florida. Now, what's interesting, two of these matchups today are matchups from the weekend, right? Florida right. and South Carolina played each other, Kentucky and Auburn. Florida, they're going with Brandon Sproat. I know Will Sanders, man, he's Mr. Reliable. He's not going to kill you. But Sproat and Neely have been amazing for Florida. I think that's going to continue. Florida's bats are hot. I mean, I like Florida, but I'm not laying the juice. I'm not laying 185. Maybe if you can parlay them with whatever else you like on the sporting landscape today, like another heavy favorite, I'd probably like that.
All righty. Well, Logan, that was, again, that was Logan Quentin, our guy, your guy, host of the 920 podcast and the college baseball expert of Knoxville. We appreciate you joining us today. And hopefully we'll catch you again later this week. Have a good one.
See you, buddy.
All right, you heard the man, Logan Quentin. But with that being said, we got to take a break because that was a long phone call. Stay with us right here on the Blitz. Final segment of the Blitz. Charlie and Stackhouse here with you. SEC tournament is underway now, rolling along, and you said it's now 5-0 Alabama.
5-0 Alabama. The Georgia switched pitchers. It was first and second. New pitcher comes in. Dome pieces the Alabama batter, sends him to first. Base is loaded. Then the next batter, he performs a wild pitch, and they run one in, and then a sac fly to make it 5-0. Two outs, man on second. It's just looking like Georgia's not going to have the pitching to be able to do anything about this game.
All right, well.
This kid is all over the place. I feel bad for him, honestly.
Looks like Georgia could get plenty of rest before they head to a region next Friday.
Yeah, I'm feeling pretty bad for them right now. It's not looking good on this game.
Alabama trying to replicate what they did last year and make that late push to get into the tournament. They still got a chance. So that's where we're at in Hoover right now. Hey, want to let you know, hey, if you're listening to the live stream on the FanRun web browser, well, that live stream brought to you by our friends at Linderman Sports Medicine. Linderman Sports Medicine in Memphis, Tennessee. People are coming from all over Tennessee and beyond to get back in the game of life. If you're active right now, or excuse me, if you're not active right now because of discomfort, pain, anything that's limiting your daily activities, then check out the amazing work being done by Dr. Laura Linderman at Linderman Sports Medicine. Again, people coming from all over to get back in the game of life without surgery. So if you're trying to get back on your bike, back to the gym, walk at the park, have a healthier lifestyle, whatever it may be, visit LendermanSportsMedicine.com. And they'll take care of you. LENDERMON sportsmedicine.com. Wrapping the show up like we always do with a little if you haven't heard. Stackhouse, do you have anything?
Yeah, if you haven't heard, this weekend is a huge Memorial Day weekend for the Tennessee Vols football team. They have, I believe, if my eyes don't deceive me, I believe it's 25 recruits are coming up here this weekend, including Nico, Francis Maugawa, I don't know how to say his name, the offensive lineman, five-star, edge rusher Chandavian Bradley, he's coming up here. I'm talking about just four- and five-star recruits with a sprinkle of threes and a couple of JUCOs and Elijah Davis and Will Whitson. All coming up here this weekend. So huge, huge recruiting weekend for the Vols. So you're going to see a lot of guys roaming around the streets. So welcoming them, welcome them with open arms. There we go.
All right. Yeah, we'll get into that more tomorrow too. Still some stuff it was a busy day. We just didn't get to.
We got a good week going here, man.
Yeah, I mean, we there's some interesting comments from a Danny White interview that I wanted to get on. We didn't even touch the NBA playoffs, which I'm okay with because last night hurt my heart.
Every other game in that game is just every game's boring.
We didn't get to that either. Obviously, tomorrow we also have Tennessee in action, so a lot to get to still tomorrow. And we'll obviously dive into that recruiting weekend. A huge, huge, huge recruiting weekend. Coming up in Knoxville.
Just get you ready for all to come, man. I mean, baseball, basketball, just preparing you for I'm expecting a great season of football.
If you haven't heard, I don't know. Well, I don't think we got to this yesterday. I think it happened, during Talk Sports. Hard Knocks in season next year, heading to Arizona to keep up with the Cardinals. And I feel like a lot of people were like, this isn't really interesting. This doesn't move the needle. I think this is must-watch TV. I really do. I think that this is absolutely incredible. Because if you look at the point in the season where the Cardinals will take over, there is a chance that, when HBO comes in.
Oh, they do a mid-season switch?
Yeah, no, they're doing mid-season Hard Knocks. Like last year they did the Colts. They debuted it last year for the first time. well, whenever they would be set to go to Arizona, there's a chance that Arizona is
in
up
shambles.
In flames. Yeah. Because they're going to have a really, 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 really tough close to their schedule the back half of the year. They also open up with three tough games. You have the drama surrounding Kyler Murray, the extension that he wants that he doesn't have. I think Cliff Kingsbury is going to be firmly
Hopkins
on the hot seat
much
by then.
TV, though.
Yeah, Hopkins coming off the PED suspension. Like,
yeah, this could be
this is
right. going to
be must watch. Yeah. You know, Hard Knocks usually is presenting hope and passion and you know, looking towards the future and whatever else. Like, you know, there's always an air of like hope and optimism, whatever else with these Hard Knocks, but we've never ever actually gotten to have a behind the scenes look at an organization in disarray.
I feel like the Browns did it pretty well with Hugh Jackman.
So I think, but, you know, that is going to be really fun to just follow the drama that surrounds that.
It will be fun. I'll be watching. I don't really watch Hard Knocks too much. I watch it, but just not that interesting. I don't care about the Colts, so that's why I didn't watch that last year.
Also, if you haven't heard, Deebo Samuel skipping OTAs, which not that surprising. And also, Robert Woods is out there running around today for the Titans, which
that's good.
Hey, very good there, because you know you don't really know where he's at with his ACL recovery. Here on the way out, though, our national days of the day, we got today, Tuesday, May 24th, National Brothers Day, National Aviation Maintenance Technician Day, National Escargot Day, National Scavenger Hunt Day. I do love a good scavenger hunt.
I do too.
National Yucatan Shrimp Day.
I don't even know that was a thing.
What is Yucatan Shrimp?
I hope it's a massive shrimp, dude. I hope it's just like 2 feet wide.
Is it, I mean, I guess like the Yucatan Peninsula? Like, does it come from
that?
That's
what I was thinking.
What is the Yucatan Peninsula? Is that like Gulf of Mexico? No.
Is it the Yucatan?
I guess these shrimp come from there. Yucatan. Yeah, Yucatan, Mexico. So the Yucatan Peninsula is like that little peninsula where there's like Belize and Cancun.
Oh, it's a dish.
Yeah.
In Yucatan with a shrimp. It looks banging too.
Garlic butter and a special sauce.
Mmm, it does
it
look good.
It gives it a kick that keeps diners coming back for more. Serve it with crusty bread and white wine or an icy cold beer. You can almost imagine the dazzling blue waters of the Gulf and the sea breeze with every bite. And don't forget the large, tender shrimp, too.
Ugh, that sounds so good,
actually,
dude.
Yeah.
Ugh.
It does sound good. And it's also a state day. Any guesses?
Utah.
Pretty close. Want one more try?
Nevada.
Sadly, it does touch Utah. Does not touch Nevada, as it is Wyoming. Ah. Happy National Wyoming Day. No talk sports today. However, it will be the drive, as always, coming up at 3. So national programming for the next 3 hours, then back to your local programming with the drive, followed by overtime. So stay with us here on Fan Run Radio. For Charlie, for Stackhouse, y'all have a good one out there. Go watch some SEC baseball.